You're listening to the Save the Marriage Podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
Hey, this is Lee Baucom, and you're with us on the Save the Marriage Podcast. We have crossed an interesting number. We have now done more than 30 podcasts, and I got word from somebody that said that they had not been able to get all of them. They are now all available on the iTunes or on Stitcher, however you're getting to this. They've always been available on the website at Save the Marriage blog.com. That's SaveTheMarriageBlog.com. But now they're all available on iTunes. Evidently, there was a little setting that we needed to change that we didn't know. So the last 10 were what people were getting. Now you're getting all of them. Just wanted to let you know that up front that they are available since we had some concerns about that. I hope that things are changing in your area, at least in the weather. I've got to warn you, it's a warm day here. It's not going to be tomorrow, but it's a warm day right now. And right behind me is my big old yellow lab, Sunny, and Sunny is snoring. So if you hear a little snoring in the background, it's not me. It's my dog. Well, the reason I wanted to talk today was because of an email I received last week. Somebody basically wrote me. In fact, I heard from several people, and it's not a new accusation, but I wanted to clarify some. The person basically said that I was trying to give off easy answers, which is interesting to me because I've constantly said that this is difficult work. There are simple steps, you know, and I talk about that in my my Kindle book, How to Save Your Marriage in 3 Simple Steps. That they're simple steps, but they're not easy steps. They're simple because they're direct. There really are those 3 things you have to do, but they're not easy. They're not easy at all. They're just direct. They're simple. And so this person said I was trying to give easy answers, and that's the first time I've been accused of that because most people tell me how difficult it is to do this work. So that was a new one, and they told me that I was just a kind of the pep squad, the cheerleader, calling people on the sideline to keep on going when they maybe ought to quit. So let me be clear here. I do this work for one reason, to save marriages. That's my mission. I was fortunate to grow up in a family with intact marriages. My parents have a great marriage. My grandparents had great marriages. But I watched my aunts and uncles who did not. In fact, there's one aunt and uncle that have been happily married. The others, not. The others have had multiple marriages, and I watched the carnage of what happened in those situations. I watched what was happening with my cousins, and it gave me this place of really having a deep empathy for marriage troubles. And so my one task is to provide information on how to save a marriage. That's what I do. I have no delusion that every marriage is going to be saved. I just think that in our culture, we've gotten into the habit of throwing away too many things, marriage being one of them. We've made it too easy to get out of the relationships. We've made it too easy for somebody to walk away without having to face up to the commitment that they made. And I think that is destructive to kind of the core elements of our society, of family, of giving kids a place to feel safe, of giving a couple support that lets them be as healthy as possible. All the research shows that kids who come out of intact families are A, healthier, and B, go create more healthy families along the way. Research also shows that a happily married couple is much more healthy for a lot more years, does better financially, basically improves in all areas of life. That leads me to think that marriage is a pretty cool thing to save when you can, but I'm not delusional enough to think that every marriage can be saved. Just more than are being saved. So my task is to give you the best information I can on saving a marriage. That's what I do, and that's what I'm going to continue to do. And so I've got to let you decide when you'll stop. My feeling is that if somebody no longer wants to work on their marriage, they can stop listening and stop reading my information. But I'm going to keep providing that. I'm not ever going to say, oh, I think you need to walk away, because that's not my role. Your role is to decide that. However, in today's podcast, I want to talk about how you might think about that choice, the very difficult choice of deciding, do I continue to work on this, or have I had enough? Have I worked hard enough? And that's a tough one. It's a tough one because, well, our mind fools us a bit about how much we can do and how hard we have to work. It's a mind game. So I start with a question that a lot of people come to me and say, will my marriage be saved? Will my marriage? And they'll tell me some about it. And unfortunately, I'll tell you up front, I can't answer whether your marriage will be saved. And I'll tell you why. There are too many elements in play, including the fact that your spouse still gets to choose. You can't force that spouse to stay with you, and that's never been my task. Statistics will show that people have used my approach, and we've documented this a few times in some rather unscientific, but I think pretty decent research that shows that upwards of 80% of the people who've used my material have been able to save their relationship. But that still leaves a good number, 15 to 20% that have not been able to save their marriage. And I've been watching about why that is. And sometimes it's because they've come too late. They've come too late to the process. And sometimes it's because they might decide not to implement. And that's one of the places that we look. I eliminated people from that survey that did not use my information. Right off the bat, we wiped them out. If they did not use that information, we didn't count them because that doesn't prove an approach. It's kind of like saying, we look at 100 people and only 3 of them went to the gym. Well, that's only 3% who got into shape. So 3%, the exercise program doesn't work. Exercise program only works when they go to the gym. And so the 3% who went to the gym, 100% of them might have gotten improvement. And so we look at the people who actually applied and used the information. And then I began to look at what makes the difference. And I'm going to talk to you about some reasons, 5 reasons in a little bit about why I think there are complicators, the complicators that really make it much more difficult to save a marriage. The problem with statistics is they don't matter at all, because the only thing that matters to you is what happens in your situation. And so I can quote you the statistics overall on why things work, but I can't tell you whether it's going to work in your particular situation. So you got to understand that you're stepping into an unknown. And sometimes when there's nothing guaranteed, we can grow very weary and very tired. Our exhaustion begins to creep into our mindset. And sometimes that's when your mind starts talking and you start vacillating on what to do. And you start thinking, well, this just isn't going anywhere. And your emotions get the better of your thought process. And then you get yourself into trouble, because at that point you begin to be very unsure on what's possible. So I want to just kind of remind you of something you already know. That's human experience. Our mind is constantly giving us false information. Our mind is constantly creating thoughts because our mind is looking for an easy way out. Our mind is looking for some way to avoid the struggle, some way to avoid having a difficult time, some way of feeling those hurtful emotions. Our mind doesn't want to do that. But that doesn't mean that our spirit wants to avoid it. And that's one of those places I really find the difference in those who are really working on their relationship and those who aren't, is whether they're listening to their mind trying to get them out of the struggle or their spirit trying to get them beyond the struggle. The emotions are playing on both of those at the same time. But one calls from a deeper place and the other calls from our mind, which is just full of litter a lot of the times. I've had couples say, I think you should say everything that's on your mind to your spouse, to which I would say, I don't want anybody to know what goes on in my mind. There's some stuff that's just trash that just doesn't need to see the light of day and that I don't need to listen to. It's interesting to me how many times I've noticed that if my friend was saying to me all the things that my mind cooks up, I wouldn't have that friend. And yet my closest friend, if you look at who I spend the time with and who I'm talking to the most, is my mind, right? It's constantly telling me whether I'm doing something good or bad or how imperfect I am or where I've fallen short. And all of those places our mind cooks those things up. And when that happens, we get lost in our mind. We get lost in that thinking. And when we get lost in that thinking, we stop realizing how critical that is and how many times our mind says, I should just quit. I should just quit. And it's a mind game, Right. I remember when I was, and I've talked about this experience, but I remember I was running one time doing a marathon, and I was by myself. We were running a trail marathon. We had no fans, nobody cheering us on. I wasn't running with anyone. I was all by myself running up a hill, and I just thought, why don't I just quit? Why am I doing this? What is the purpose of this? That was my mind. And I had to remind myself, tell my other part of my mind that that's just my mind talking. Had nothing to do with what I wanted to do. It was just my mind creating those messages. And so sometimes we have to make sure of where are we coming from. So the question is, do you listen to your mind, what it's telling you, or do you keep trying? Are you listening to your mind or your spirit? And sometimes our spirit finally says, enough's enough. And I'm okay with that. I just want to make sure you have the best opportunity of giving it a try. So even when we grow weary and tired, when there's that piece of us that's still saying, is there something more I can do? That's the spirit talking. And if you can sit down and really think about it and realize there's not, that's an okay place to be. Sometimes it's worthwhile to realize there is nothing more that can be done. There's nothing more that you have to give. There's no more options without giving up too much of yourself. So when is it time to quit? That's a very hard one to answer. It's an individual choice. I'm going to talk a little bit about some five things that you can kind of think through. Are these true for me? And maybe those complicators are so great that I need to really pay attention to that. So when is it time to quit? That's up to you, except for the very obvious. And I've said this repeatedly in the material. I have it written down in the material. When there is abuse, you quit trying. That's, for me, is the non-starter or the ending of the starting. When there's abuse, you quit. You get some help and you work on taking care of yourself for a very important reason. Abuse usually escalates. Rarely do you find someone who is abusive who stays at a certain level. Now, let's talk about what I mean by abuse. Physical abuse is real easy. If someone's pushing, throwing things, hitting, kicking, doing anything that is a physical threat, that is for me, a very clear one. If someone in a fit of anger calls you a name, that's not necessarily abuse. It crosses a boundary, but it's not necessarily abuse. If it's something that is repeated every single time and it's used to degrade you and threaten you and make you fearful, that's become emotional abuse. Sometimes we all say things that we wish we hadn't, and that doesn't necessarily mean that the person is abusive. What they said might feel abusive and might feel hurtful, but there's a difference there. So sometimes it's important, if you're feeling that, to check it out with someone who's pretty fair and balanced. If it's physical, there is no checking out. The checking out is you check out of the relationship and get yourself safe. So I'm hoping I've said that very clearly, that if there is abuse in your relationship, that's a non-starter for me. That's an ending of the process right off. So you can kind of say, okay, there's that percentage of people who are being abused who do not need to be saving their marriage. They need to be saving themselves and their kids, and they need to be protecting. They need to be taking care of themselves. If you happen by chance to be the abuser, then you need to get help for that and realize that that's all about fear and control. That's your issue. And that the person who is receiving that needs to not be with you while you're dealing with that. Okay, so let's get to the rest. Because the vast majority of people, that's not going to be so clear cut. For the vast majority of people, it's much more confusing than that. So I want you to ask yourself this question, and I really want you to do this exercise. It's a very simple exercise, but one that can be very powerful, and it's going to play into what you do in just a little bit. Ask yourself, why am I trying to save our marriage? Why am I trying to save our marriage? And I want you to sit down and write down your reasons. There's likely more than one or two reasons. There's likely to be a number of them. Sometimes you might go, well, that's obvious for the kids, or well, that's obvious for whatever. You might name one, and then I want you to think through what are the others that are not quite so obvious. Write them all down. This is not one of those where I want you to just kind of sit here and stir, because we're going to use this in a few minutes. So write them down. Understand that there's no right or wrong reason. I'm not looking for a right answer. And if you say the wrong thing, then, well, you're out of here. But these are good things to write down. So I want you to just write down those reasons, however many, and you keep on pondering them. And while you're doing that, I want you to just pause this podcast. Just hit pause and go ahead and write it down. Go ahead and do that now. Go ahead and hit pause and write it down. Okay, I'm assuming that you've done that. Now I want you to look at your answer. Look at the answer and divide them into two different categories. There are those that you might notice that are you really just trying to stop a divorce? In other words, are you trying to stop the legal action, or are you trying to stop the person from leaving you? Stopping your divorce is fear-based. It's not that that's wrong, it's just fear-based. Okay? And so when you're trying to stop something, you're trying to keep it from happening, that's a fear-based response. When you're trying to save your marriage, you'll notice those are the other categories. You're saving a relationship, or you're trying to honor a commitment, or you want an intact family for your kids, or you know how much damage this is going to do to your finances that's going to affect you the rest of your life and what you're able to do. There are lots of ways you might explain that. Some of that has some fear to it. But there's also an aspirational side to that. I want to get to the place where we have a great marriage. That could be the aspirational. I wish we could get to the place that our marriage represents the vows we took, the promise we made, where we started from. Most relationships start with all kinds of opportunities and possibilities. And then over time, we chip away at those. And sometimes this place of restoring a marriage is really trying to get back to the ideals, the higher places that you're moving from. So if you come up with some aspiration-based answers, that's great. Here's the problem with those two differences. Eventually, fear falls away. You get used to fear. People who are working to avoid a divorce will find themselves eventually without energy and without direction, because when you're trying to stop something, you end up usually being manipulative and trying to force it and trying to control it, because it's fear-based. It comes from that place of fear, and fear wants what it wants. It's self-preservation. It's not us. It's me. I want this. I don't want you to leave me. I don't want to have a divorce. I don't want, and you fill in the blank. Those are fear bases. And eventually the fear, you get used to it. You know, I've watched this a number of times, and when it first comes up, you know, someone is in great alarm when their spouse says, "Hey, I've talked to an attorney and I'm filing the paperwork." They go into great alarm and they start doing all these actions to try to stop that. But then they kind of get used to it. They get an attorney involved. Their friends get behind them, and they get used to it. And eventually, they don't have direction. They don't have energy. So sometimes, one of the questions I have for people who are ready to give up is it because it's been fear-based? Let's eliminate those. If it's because it's been fear-based, then you're not going to find any more energy. But if it's aspirational, that's different. You see, what I don't want you to hear me say is if you find your answer is aspirational, that doesn't mean you're not going to run out of energy. Emotional effort, trying to work on a relationship, emotional effort is emotionally taxing. It's exhausting to be working that way. So even if your answer is fully aspirational, that doesn't mean that you should expect that you're going to feel great and have all kinds of energy for it and just keep on pushing. You're still going to be tired. The difference is there's meaning and purpose behind that. There's something else that draws you to a higher place. There's a place for your spirit to take hold of that and embrace it. When fear is what's controlling it, the energy will dissipate. The direction will be lost. When it's aspirational, you still have to struggle sometimes for the energy, but there's a deeper place. You can step back and say, "Wow, I am exhausted, but I will continue to push forward." So I want you to use that as kind of a place to decide where you are with that. When there is meaning and purpose in your answer, you stop looking for the easy and quick. You know it might take effort. You know it might lead to exhaustion, but you are willing to do it. You go for the real and permanent over the easy and quick. Personal changes and relational changes are difficult, but that's what's required for the permanent and real. To look at how do I need to change. See, when people are trying to stop a divorce, they might make promises about wanting to change, but they're rarely really ready to make an effort. They're rarely really ready to admit that they need to do something. It's so easy to say, "I want to stop this divorce, but this isn't my problem. I haven't done anything here. They're the ones who acted out. They're the ones who are mean. They're the ones who fill in the blank." When somebody sees that a relationship is in trouble and there's an aspirational element, they realize that they have something that they need to do too. That's the personal change. I'm not saying that people are broken. I'm saying we all have places of growth. That's another one that people have often said is, why do you blame me? Why are you blaming me that I have to make these changes? And my response is, I'm not blaming you. I feel the same way, that I've constantly got to grow. I've got new places to grow into. And that's where I know that I'm into my aspirational place, because I'm willing to keep growing. I'm willing to keep trying. I'm willing to keep on making an effort to get to a higher place. So personal changes need to happen and relational changes need to happen. I've got to change the way I'm relating to my spouse. I don't just need to convince him to stop the legal process or convince him to stay in the house. I've got to change how we relate. And when you change how you relate, it forces the other to make some changes. Okay, so let's get to those clues that a marriage may be very difficult to recover. Now notice, I didn't say impossible, I said very difficult to recover. Here are five clues that it's going to be a tough one. Okay, the first one is that there's a legal process in play. In other words, your spouse has started those wheels rolling. Divorce papers have been filed or have been filled out, have made it to either an attorney or maybe at this point even at the courthouse. When the legal process kicks in, the difficulty is exponentially greater for one simple reason. It becomes adversarial at that point in ways that it has not been in before. Before, it was easy to say, you know, we're just not getting along here. We're not connecting the way we need to. We don't really like each other. There are lots of ways that that can play out. But then it becomes you versus me. It says it on the paperwork. You versus me. And the legal process tears apart the connection that has been there. It tears apart the very ways you connected. So when a legal process is in play, it becomes much more difficult. Number two difficulty is when there have been multiple or a long-lasting affair that a spouse refuses to end. Those are two different things, the multiple affairs or the long-lasting one that a spouse refuses to end. The reason is when there's a multiple affair, we're not just talking about a disconnected relationship. We're not talking about someone who was disconnected and didn't protect the boundaries and therefore put the relationship at risk. We're talking about someone who is now seeking something out. It may be adrenaline junkies, it may be addiction to relationships or to sex, but there's something else underneath it that is violating and is going to continue to violate the relationship. Long-lasting affair is dangerous because the other person is building a deeper and deeper connection with this third party. And as that happens and they refuse to end it, it begins to grow on itself and their disconnection from you grows as the connection goes with another person. Now, long lasting does not mean 3 weeks or even 6 months. An ongoing years and year affair is what I'm talking about here. I've seen affairs that fizzle out after 6 months or even a year. But when they get beyond the 2 to 3 year mark, it's very difficult to turn it around because they've gotten through the beginning of the relationship. It has become a relationship and their connection deepens while the connection with you is waning. Now, again, this does not mean it's impossible. It just means it becomes more and more difficult. Okay, the third hint, the third clue that it's going to be very difficult is when the person has cut all possible ties and has become resentful and angry consistently. They refuse to communicate with you. You know, I had an email just the other night that somebody said, you know, my spouse lives 2 hours away, doesn't respond to my email, won't answer my phone, and won't answer the door if I show up. How can I save my relationship? Will your material work? And my answer was simply, no, it will not. There has to be some level of connection in order to grow more connection. So when all possible ties have been lost, as opposed to the person who wrote me just last night and said, you know, there's not a whole lot of connection. They won't answer my text. And I said, well, you know, if they won't have any connection, it's difficult. And then he said, well, I'm back home, you know, every now and then, and I'm in the house and we're spending 5, 6, 7, 8 days in a row together. And then I'm out for 2 weeks and then I'm back partly because of work. That's a whole different matter. There is connection to build on. I look for the places where there is connection to build on. Okay. The second part of that is they've become resentful and angry consistently, meaning there is no other way they are with you. That raises the big red flags with me. When they cut possible ties and all you're getting is the anger, angry and resentful, it's going to be very hard to penetrate that. you're to blame in their mind. And you have to be cut off in order for them to continue on. And that makes it very difficult to make any headway. Number four is they've begun to push against more and more of your personal boundaries. In other words, they've escalated things. They're name calling, they're insulting, maybe they're physically threatening. Whenever your boundaries are getting pushed more and more often, what you're seeing is a person who's becoming more and more out of control of their emotional state. They're not able to manage that emotional state because there's so much anger and resentment. And so it's begun to up the ante, and it becomes scary for you and violating your boundaries. So when that has happened, it becomes much more difficult to recover. Number five, the fifth clue is they refuse all attempts at any level of reconciliation or forgiveness. In other words, if you try to apologize, it's shoved aside and ignored. There is no attempt to try to get back on the same page, whether it's about parenting or anything else. They just refuse all attempts at reconciliation and are unwilling to step into forgiveness in any way. Okay, so those are the five clues. Is there a legal process in play? Is there a multiple or a long-lasting affair that they're not willing to end? Have they cut all possible ties and become resentful and angry pretty much consistently with you? Have they begun to push against your personal boundaries repeatedly? Or have they refused all attempts at any level of reconciliation or forgiveness? You don't have to have all five. Each one of those factors begins to grow how difficult it is to recover. Now, notice I said the difficulty level. It does not make it impossible. People do recognize they need to make a change. Some people say, you know what, I realize that I've gotten into a bad place and I've got to change that. And they become back around, or they realize that this affair was really more of an addiction, more of an unhealthy place, and they move away from it. Or they realize that they need to find some place of responsibility, of reconciliation or forgiveness. And so that can turn things around very quickly, but the factors there raise the difficulty level. But again, do not make it impossible. You just need to know what you're up against at those points. So now what I want you to do is go back to that list. You remember the reasons that you wrote down? Okay, if you didn't write them down, go ahead and hit pause and go back and do that now, because we're gonna use that. Okay, so if you're still here, I want you to notice the ones that are not about fear. Focus on the ones that are not about fear and make them your mantra that keeps you moving forward. Write them down. Keep them where you can see them. They're reminders of why you're doing this. When we're lost, what we need most is a reminder of why we're doing it, not the emotions attached to it, but why you do this. And if at some point the why doesn't matter anymore, you've crossed a new line that tells you that this is a whole different process. Right, that your energy has now shifted. But you want to have some place you can rely on to look back and say, that's why I'm doing this. So what do you do if you've got some of these places where you just can't make headway? When your spouse is making it difficult to connect, I want you to focus on what you can do to improve your life. That's what you have full control over. Now, both need to happen. Understand that you can't just self-improve your way to a great marriage. You can self-improve yourself to a great life, but not to a great marriage. Both need to happen, but you can start with what you can do. You can start with your self-improvement, and that's something you need to be attending to anyway, right? Even if the marriage cannot make it, you need to be working on that part for yourself. You need to be growing into a higher state to be ready for what else comes in life. You need to be growing there for lots of reasons. It may be about kids or work or a mission in life, something that's going to drive you forward. That's where your spirit is calling you forward. Okay, then I want you to find some support more than you have now. If you're feeling emotionally exhausted, you don't have a support piece in place. It might be that you find a therapist who can listen to you, or a friend who can be a fairly objective person for you. Not someone who's going to say, you need to end this relationship. You need to be able to say, hey, I'm still working on this marriage and I need you to support me in that, even if it feels hard and tough, because I'm here for the long haul. That could be someone you could find. You might find a relationship coach that's able to pull you through. That's why we have them on staff, that we have them available so that people can work with a coach knowing where they come from, that they are pro-relationship and they are all about trying to get you moving forward. When you have that support, it helps you keep your perspective. It helps keep that mind that's always saying, you ought to quit, you ought to quit, you ought to quit, in check, and balances it with, this is worthwhile. I've got something higher I'm moving towards. It pulls you from that spirit place, and it helps you regain your emotional energy. It helps you regain a new place that begins to change how your mind is telling you that. You can do this. What the this is can vary from person to person. You can work on changing yourself. You can work on the relationship as long as you continue to want to. And I want to make sure in this whole talk that the reason you want to comes from that aspirational point, not a fear base, and that you're aware that sometimes even when you want to, you can be tired. You just choose not to be listening to that voice that's telling you to stop. That's the reason for pulling out those real reasons for working on your marriage, to make those your mantra, because they return you to meaning and purpose. They return you to your spirit. They return you to a truer place than your ego, than your fears will be. And then you can begin to make a real decision on whether you need to work on this relationship or not. Okay, hopefully that's helped you give a little bit of thought to that process, because a lot of times people get tricked up by the mind games. And if that's been happening with you, then I want you to find some ways to address it. And these are some ways of doing that, of making sure that you're following what's the best way forward for you, recognizing that not every marriage is going to be saved. And if you get to the place where you feel like you can't do it, I want you to know I support you in that. I support you in getting to the place where you say, I am no longer willing to do that. I'm here to provide the information as long as you need it. But that's as far as it goes. I'm not going to change that stance because I'm still here to save marriages. But in the end, I also want to make people better just in life, to find a thriving place to be. That's my bigger thing, is that we all can thrive in more real ways. That's what Thriveology is about. If you haven't found Thriveology, you can find me on the internet at thriveology.com. Also, let me just say that one of the things you can really do to help is to share this. If this has been useful for today, you'll notice that maybe there's some pieces in here that would fit for anyone. And if you're on Twitter, it's easy to let people know about this. All you have to do is type in your browser, savethemarriage.com/love, and it will pre-populate a tweet with how people can get to this webcast. Also, remember that you can always leave an anonymous ranking in iTunes. You can go there and nobody's going to know who you are or what's going on in your life, but you can help me by giving us some more ratings and let us know how we're doing. And I would love to know how you find your energy. You can leave that in the comment section below if you're on the blog, or if you want to visit the blog, savethemarriageblog.com. That's savethemarriageblog.com. Know that this podcast is all about giving you the information you need so you can move forward in saving your marriage, in improving yourself, in improving the connection, and in creating a new path for your relationship. This is Lee Balcom. I wish you the best.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage Podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.